is that there was some confusion on whether it was a city project or a county project. And both entities said, no, it's not ours. It was actually an airport project. And so in Carolyn's story, it says the $550,000 project, which kicked off July 10th, is part of a Federal Aviation Administration project to realign Boyer Avenue to improve safety at the airport. The project is expected to be completed August 26th. The project shifts the roadway where it curves around the airport about 15 feet to the east, Sandpoint Airport Manager Dave Schuck said. By shifting the road over, the perimeter fence around the airport will fall outside the required FAA safety area for the airport's runway instead of inside of it. So story goes on to talk about when they made that change to Boyer. I guess I don't know if they knew about the rules then or it was just not put in correctly, but it didn't fall within the guidelines that the FAA has for kind of a safety area around the airport between things that are above ground. So I know that when we look at this, it kind of, that's a pretty big artery, north south. Yes, and so yeah. You know, you couple that with the construction coming into town on the highway there, and it can be kind of hard.
Yeah, and the county has to be super cognizant of things surrounding the airport, because the FAA controls basically that airspace and what's going to happen there. And they could completely cut off funding if they fail to meet the requirements that are placed before them.
Right. And one of the interesting things on the story that I don't know that a lot of people maybe realize is that there's, you know, there's the county, but there's actually an airport board that oversees that area, and that's kind of their jurisdiction. And so one of the things that came up in the article was that if this was a county project, this probably would not happen. But, you know, because of the growth in the area, the growth of the airport, in the next few years, I think 5 years out, they're looking to redo the runway. And essentially, like you said, if they didn't have these safety measures in place, then the FAA would not be giving this money to the local airport.
Yeah. So, and I think anybody that drives out Boyer's, I know I got stopped there. I saw they didn't have it signed properly, I didn't think. They signed it after you also already crossed the railroad tracks going north. And so you're kind of committed. I thought, well, I can't believe they're really closing it. This was like over a week ago, 2 weeks ago, yeah. Probably. And it got to the end. It was closed. I had to turn. Yeah.
Well, no, the exact same thing with me is that it's not really clear like where this construction is going on. So, you know, they're doing a lot of development out there. So I didn't know if when I saw that sign the first time, you know, is that maybe mean that there's construction coming along here that we're going to be able to get around, or is it one of the side roads that is closed? And then I got all the way out there and realized, nope, I'm going to have to go back into town and then go back out.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the bigger stories this week. I'll jump in with a story. Can't miss it. It's the Festival at Sandpoint is going on. And in fact, I went to the first concert last night.
How was that?
Britt Floyd it was terrific. Yeah. It really was. You know, they were playing, it's a Pink Floyd tribute band. And I was never thinking I would be interested in a tribute band. You know, it's like the fake Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
But it was excellent. The music was spot on. And they had a laser show to go with it.
So yeah, how was that?
It was a performance. Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Anyways, the festival is one of the biggest events that brings people to our town, no question. They have 8 shows, of course, this year. 3 of them are already sold out. And if you look at the economic impact of the festival on the town, I think the number I've seen is that, you know, this 2 weeks worth of events brings over $3.5 million into town and economic activity that wouldn't be generated otherwise. Personally, I think that number is probably higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
The festival, of course, whether you like the music or not, it's a big impact on the lives of people here. And if you are a festival fan, one of the things that you will notice is that the tent is gone. The iconic white tent that the festival has had for almost since its beginning 40 years ago, this is the 40th year for the festival, has been retired. And the Sandpoint Reader had a story on that in their paper yesterday. And I'll just read from that right now. Since the festival's founding, 2 tents have sheltered stagehands and music legends alike from all manner of weather. The first tent, which was in that iconic white kind of starburst design, was purchased in 1984. And it stood as a memorial to the festival's founder, Winifred Fred Kubiak. It returned every year in her honor until 2001, when it became really degraded. And in a one-night fundraiser back in 2001, the festival raised $40,000 and purchased a replacement that was identical to the original tent. But that means that the tent this year was 22 years old. That's a lot of time on on a fabric structure like that. And the festival was researching a replacement, but they discovered that technology has moved on in terms of these kinds of outdoor performance venues. As a tensile tent, the structure's cables that are meant to pull it away from one another, they create a lot of stress on the canopy, and it gives the tent that iconic shape. But if one cable were to snap, the entire structure would come crashing down on the whoever's underneath it, festival workers or fans or of course, performers. Yeah. So tensile tents across the country have been deemed unsafe for concert venues. So they made the painful decision that they needed to retire that tent as a safety measure. It's kind of hard to argue with that. There's been a lot of folks that are expressing dismay that the tent is gone. They've replaced it with a big new stage. It's they call it like Optimus Prime. It folds out of a trailer.
Yeah.
And then it pops up, and it has actually kind of a hard, because it's got the sides of the trailer on that form the roof of this thing. You wouldn't know it to look at it now, but the way it unfolds is pretty interesting. And it's a big, tall, it looks like rock and roll concert.
Yeah, essentially, if you go to any outdoor concert now, this is kind of the stage that you're probably going to see.
Yeah, and it is much more modern in the sense that they can have much more sophisticated lighting arrays with it. One of the really good things for people on the field with this new tent is that they had to have big concrete blocks that held these high tension cables down on the field. All that stuff's gone, so it's a lot cleaner for the people.
Yeah,
that are
on the field. I was going to ask you about that since you went last night. I mean, what did you think of kind of the sight lines? Did you notice a difference?
It was great. Yeah. I mean, once the music starts playing, you're looking at the performers, and actually the sight lines are better now.
Yeah.
From a lot of points of the field. So it's an adjustment for people to make with the festival. And you're going to be surprised if you go there and you see this new tent. But there's a pretty sound reasoning behind replacing it.
You know, I think when my wife were first discussing this, it was kind of like, did they not mention this because this was something long in the plans and they didn't want it to be something that got kind of controversial? But then Sansre Mitchell's story really lays out, this was a safety concern.
Yes.
And so, that's...
And it really did arrive very late.
Yes.
They were taking a look at the old tent. They were realizing they needed to replace it. And when they began researching that they discovered, wow, we shouldn't even be using this type of tent now.
Yeah.
Because I think it's in terms of liability too.
Right.
If they had continued using that tent, understanding that it had safety concerns, and something did happen, it would raise some major liability issues.
With this being two different entities, you got the Festival of Sandpoint, and then they're renting that spot from the city of Sandpoint. I'm guessing that some insurance company is going to come in and say, no, we're not going to do this because this is too much of a hazard.
That's right. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
And the city, too, would be involved because it is held at a city park. I'll just mention one more thing on the festival. Of course, the lineup tonight, it's Gary Clark Jr., and there are tickets available to that. And Gary Clark Jr. is a blues and rock and soul artist the word on him is he's pretty terrific. On Saturday, it's Train, and another big band with Train is called Better Than Ezra. And then on Sunday, it's the String Cheese Incident. That's an interesting sounding band. Train is sold out, but both Gary Clark Jr. tonight and String Cheese Incident Do you still have tickets available? You can get those at festival@sandpoint.com.
I was just going to say real quick, and you know, to kind of bring it around to what you were talking about, the impact that it's had on the community is just, you know, there's obviously the festival, and you know, typically the arts and crafts fair happens during this time, and then on Wednesday night we went and saw Jeff Tweedy at the Panada, and then also the Hive has their concert. Yeah. So it's kind of becoming like this 2 weeks of just all kinds of music and art, yeah, and stuff like that.
It is. No question. Actually, I think the Arts and Crafts Fair has changed now to the week following the festival.
Oh, okay. All right.
So itself is a big draw.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We actually have the first 3 weeks of August now that have, you know, big events that are bringing people into town, and it's healthy, good for the tourism industry, whether locals like to put up with the extra people in traffic, of course, is another question.
Yeah, well, but I think one other thing on this is that, you know, it seems like the restaurants are starting to get back up to full capacity and stuff. And so kind of, you know, a year or two ago, it was probably hard to find a seat around this time. But like the other night we went out and, you know, looked like the restaurants were full, but there were still places, you know, it wasn't the long line, and you were walking past restaurants that were closed.
More restaurants are opening. Yeah. All right. What do you have next for us, Will?
So this one was kind of interesting. It was from the Idaho Capital Sun. They published it this morning. And, you know, just a real quick story to look at is that Idaho State University is expanding its program that lets college graduates go back to school to earn a bachelor's degree in nursing. So the university announced this week that its accelerated Bachelor of Nursing degree program is headed to Coeur d'Alene. The program already trains students in Meridian and at Idaho State University's main campus in Pocatello. Classes in the Coeur d'Alene program will be held at Kootenai Health. Students can also be placed in healthcare facilities for clinical learning opportunities in urban and rural North Idaho. 10 students will enroll in the first year of the program. But when we look at the other sites where they do this, they have 40 students in Pocatello and 50 in Meridian. So, you know, I know here healthcare is come into question, especially a couple months ago here at Bonner General Health, as far as, you know, the amount of people that they have. And so I think here, you know, there is obviously a big need in the state for nurses, and we're seeing that Idaho State University is providing an opportunity for people to get that nursing degree in an accelerated fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think that's a positive for our region here, because one of the biggest things of bringing people to Sandpoint now is cost of housing.
Yes.
And if families with kids that are, they're established here, they have an easier entree into finding housing. If they can get that kind of education and they can stay in the community, that's great. You know, great for the families.
No, for sure. And, you know, I think it just kind of another higher ed opportunity there in that Coeur d'Alene area, that corridor that's got, you know, started with NIC and now, you know, Idaho State, LCSE, they all have a presence there, and they just keep offering more and more, which obviously with our growth and the number of people that are living here would make sense. But, you know, I think one of the things that you see that these schools are looking at is, okay, what's a need in this area? And obviously, as we talked about, just nursing, you know, you can never have too many nurses.
Yeah. 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 And it's going to be a greater demand going forward for sure. So I wanted to bring forward a short story that on fire, because it's ever present now in our community. The Reader had a story this week on officials are asking the public to be diligent to prevent wildfire starts. They're continuing to monitor wildfires burning in the region, and some are showing increased fire activity because we've had low humidity, a lot of dry days in a row, and we've had some windy days too. Quoting Idaho Department of Land's fire warden, Brian Hicks, quote, "We just moved into very high fire danger yesterday," he told the Reader this week. "The mountains have been on very high for several weeks, but now it's including the valleys." So, folks, if you're out there, please do be careful with fire. Locally, we have two fires that are happening. There's the B-Top fire which is up the Lightning Creek drainage outside of Clark Fork, and just checking NCWEB, which gives you daily reports on fire activity throughout the whole country, actually. That has been maintaining at 45 acres, and it's considered 30% contained at this point. And then the bigger fire that's been around for several weeks now is the Consolas Fire. It's north of Newport near the Washington state line. It's at 475 acres, and it is 50% contained. So if you're out and about, do be careful with fire. And we have been pretty fortunate. We haven't been socked in with a bunch of bad fire, wildfire smoke as we can get this time of year. And who knows, we probably will be getting more of that as it goes forward. And in fact, just checking the weather report here, today it's predicted to be sunny, and then we're going to see haze, and then tonight haze, and haze also possibly on Saturday. So that, of course, is mostly a result of wildfire smoke in the area.
So a pretty hazy forecast, huh?
It's a hazy forecast. But yeah. I will say, I'll throw it out there while we're on weather. You know, highs in the mid to high 80s every single day, clear, lows in the higher 50s. It's just like perfect summer weather.
No, it is. And, you know, it's been nice to not have that smoke in, especially as we were talking about with our, you know, the festival in town and people being outdoors, you know, and being able to walk in the afternoons and not have to worry about what that air quality number is really nice. And then as we're moving forward, you know, knock on wood, hopefully it can stay like this, because about in a week and a half, sports start up.
And our young people get out, and they're, you know, especially the football players, right?
All the fall sports are outdoors except for volleyball, you know. And so so you've got those kids outside, and typically with it being the summer, there's two a day, so the kids are really outside for a long, long time, unless it hits a certain number on the air quality, and then they have to move inside, which becomes kind of a mess, because, you know, we just don't have the indoor facilities that make it easy to house that many teams at one time.
Yeah. I did mention haze is predicted, but I just checked the Idaho DEQ for air quality, and it's predicted to remain good through Sunday, actually. Although the AQI is increasing a little bit each day, it's not unhealthy at all. So.
And then the other thing, too, is if you get up into the mountains, like my wife and I have done a couple of times, it's actually, you can see like blue skies.
Yeah.
So that's
nice. You realize. Yeah. Down in the valleys, we're actually getting some filtered.
Yeah.
What's next?
Well, all right. Well, I think we got to go to a couple of stories that we've been covering for a while, because there has been some updates. And so, you know, I guess we'll start with the West Bonner County School District, and just kind of what's the latest with them. And I know that, you know, the kind of the big news is that Brandon Durst, the new superintendent, or is going to be the superintendent once he gets credentials from the state. As you know, still needs to turn in his application there. And do you have that story?
I do. Actually, I have it from the Idaho Education News. Mm-hmm. West Bonner leader, now they're phrasing him, Brandon Durst, is adamant that his emergency provisional certificate application is forthcoming, but the moment there's a problem precluding him from applying. West Bonner is not submitting the application due to a state Board of Education procedural error. The State Department of Education and West Bonner don't agree on how to interpret an Idaho code that governs the certificate process. According to Durst, the district won't apply for the provisional certificate until the state board corrects an application error that occurred with the previous superintendent's certificate. Quoting Durst, the state board has acted in contravention to Idaho law, he said in a phone interview. It's their responsibility to fix their mistake. I can't apply for my provisional certificate until they have done their job. So it sounds like it's a bit of a stalemate, I guess you could call it that. The West Bonner is insisting that the state needs to take an action before he can really apply. And I don't know if that's like a delaying tactic or something.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, just this is totally my interpretation, but I think he just wants to make sure that all, you know, the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, so that there's no, when he moves into this position, you know, that there's nothing that other people, maybe detractors, could look at and say, okay, you're not officially this person. And so I think there is just probably diligence on his end. Now, you know, as you read through that story, you kind of see, I think, where the contention comes is that, you know, essentially a school board to hire in a situation like this needs to say, declare kind of an emergency, if you will, that they can't, you know, find somebody and need to go through this provision process. And so it, I think, you know, the state's kind of saying, well, you guys have already gone through this process. Based on what I can see, I think from the West Bonner County's angle is that, well, you know, are you sure about this as we go forward? So I think here it's just kind of a matter of diligence and making sure that, again, like I said, people don't come in afterwards and say, okay, no, look at this. This was wrong. So
Yeah. Then there's a second part of this Idaho education news story. Will the district fund sports next year? Of course, we're talking about the West Bonner County district. So we're talking about basically Priest River area. And to read from the story some more here, because of the failed two-year $9.4 million supplemental levy in May, Durston board trustees are facing a budget shortfall that could threaten cherished extracurricular activities. I'm confident that we'll have a good percentage of the money we need to be able to operate our extra and co-curricular activities, Durst said. The confidence is predicated on rebuilding the budget to make sure that the numbers we have are accurate and to ensure that we've got confidence that what we're proposing is actually going to be accomplishable by our district, he said. To fill in the gaps, they are not using money allocated for teacher salaries. We won't be taking money away from teacher salaries that had otherwise been specifically identified for that purpose or for special education or anything else, he said. I don't know.
So there's actually an update to that.
Okay.
And so at their most recent meeting, Durst announced that, and this again was in the Idaho Ed News, Durst announced that Bonner County is going to make two more payments to the district based on the payout from a 2021 supplemental levy. This includes an immediate payout of $896,859 and a second payment of about $150,000 still to be collected from property taxes in the next 12 months. And so here, you know, I think ultimately, you know, yes, the levy failed, but they still are ending a levy this last fiscal year. And so I think it sounds to me like there's one more payment, or at least two more payments, that are coming in on that. And so Brandon Durst brought this up at the last board meeting and said, I'm glad, this is a quote from him, I'm glad that the office was able to do due diligence, he's talking about the county there, to find out that what we actually had coming to us, and we're able to utilize that to make a better decision when it comes to our budgeting for this coming current fiscal year. I think that's a real win for our students. And he kind of posed this as, yeah, we're going to be able to fund those extracurriculars. A little later in the story, though, it was Margaret Hall warned that the board exercised caution before, like, saying, okay, we can do this, because, as she put it, if that's money that's identified for specific costs, we need to make sure that we don't go ahead and say, oh my, we're going to spend it. Yay. Hall said at the board meeting, we need to make sure that we understand what it was designated for, and that would come out of looking at each one of those levies and seeing what was unspent, or I'm sorry, and seeing what unspent projects there were. So here they're kind of, you know, they've got this money coming in, but again, what was it budgeted for? What did they tell the voters that they're going to use this for? And so I think that's going to be kind of interesting. Now, the other thing is that, again, like we just talked about, high school sports starts in a week and a half, you know, so something they're going to have to make a decision on this pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. You would think so.
Yeah.
If they want to have funded sports or extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
So
a couple more things from that meeting is that they said that the trustees approved a winning bid from four proposals to conduct a forensic audit of the district. This was something that Brandon Durst said that he wanted to do when he came in. And so they're going with a Spokane-based company called, I think it's Ide Bailey. EIDE Bailey, and they will complete the audit for October. And then also, he hired an interim business manager, Melissa Riley, for that position, and reported that the West Bonner 2023-2024 budget is in the final stages and will be presented to the board next Wednesday. So again, the other thing is that they don't have a budget for this coming school year.
And we're going to be out of time here, trying to stick to our 30-minute time limit for this. But let's have one more discussion on Bonner County, because that's the guys have been in the news in a major sort of way. So they had some peace there for the first hour or so of the regular business meeting of the Bonner County Commissioners on Tuesday. It proceeded without incident. So says the Sandpoint
Hey,
leader.
That's news, right? Breaking news.
That's the top of the story. But as the meeting progressed to the issue of the Bonner County Fairgrounds and a proposed RV park at the site, the tenor of the discussion changed. So fill us in on what happened this week as regards to that.
Well, you know, I think here last week we talked about the idea that, you know, some of the zoning changes went in front of the city zoning board. And so there was kind of a mixed reaction to that, ultimately saying, okay, once kind of the county gets things figured out on what they're going to do, then they can come back and reapply for I think it's the 2.2 acres that they were trying to rezone there. And so anyway,
to have an RV park.
An RV park. Yeah. Sorry about that. So anyway, depending on where you sit on this, that actually, you know, can add fuel to your argument. And I think for Commissioner Asia Williams, you know, that was one of her discussion points, or one of the points that she was trying to discuss. But it sounded like, you know, based on the Roberts Rules of Order that they've adopted, you know, they're
another new thing that was announced this week. I kind of thought that's how they were already operating, but
I think they had been using parts of it, but and you know, ultimately that provides the minority with an opportunity to kind of ask questions. Commissioner Williams was asking Commissioner Ahmet some questions, and Commissioner Ahmet was saying, I've already answered those questions. And then Chairman Bradshaw came in and said, we're moving forward. And, you know, so kind of the same old, that all of a sudden it went into recess. And
So that situation, I think it's safe to say, will probably continue for a while.
I guess on the other hand, you know, it is, we're getting to the heart of what, you know, potentially the issue is between these commissioners, you know, is this, because ultimately is Zach Hagedorn reported in the Reader, you know, the rest of the meeting, or the meeting leading up to that, was fairly copacetic with everybody getting along and stuff. So,
So that's a glimmer of hope for the future, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Will Love, my co-conspirator here today.
well, there's no conspiracies here, right?
Right. That's right. We should make that clear. Word choice, right?
That's all right.
Collaborator today.
Yeah. There we go. Okay. There we go.
We're really at our 30-minute limit here. Anything else that you want to throw out about news of the week?
No, it's just been fun to do this, and hopefully the listeners out there are enjoying as this kind of evolves. Like anything new, we're taking those baby steps to figure out what this actually is. Yep. But so far, it's been a lot of fun.
And you're going to get busy with school here, but we hope to carve out certain days when you get back in here and join us.
Yeah, and I think we'll talk about that. There might be potentials for me to maybe do some interviews that are pre-recorded and fit those in and stuff like that.
Nice. So. Okay. Well, folks, I want to say thank you for listening today. And you could tune in next Friday. We'll have North Idaho News of the Week, and we'll recap the things that happened during this next 7 days. We're not even going to take a guess at those right now.
Well, it'll definitely involve the festival. I know that.
It will involve the festival, and I predict that we'll have news from the county.
Yep.
I did want to mention one thing coming up this week. Sandpoint High's Sport Registration Day is Tuesday, August 1st. So if you have kids out there, or you are a kid, make sure you get registered for fall sports, although you can also register for winter and spring sports.
It's a great opportunity to get in there and get all the paperwork done ahead of time. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, with that, we're going to go out and we're with a song by Roseanne Cash, and then we'll be into the rest of the regular Autos Eclectic Mix. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you.
Pretty girls are swimming in the sea.